Welcome to Podcast One. We hope you'll support our sponsors who bring you these podcasts absolutely free and with limited interruptions. And of course, we appreciate you listening to this show, which will get started in just a second. Since 1983, Eddie Trunk has been the voice for fans of rock, hard rock, and heavy metal. A best-selling author, host of TV's That Metal Show, and seven national radio shows, including Trunk Nation, daily on Sirius XM.
Interesting.
Eddie offers the world his news-making interviews, passionate analysis, honest commentary, and who knows what else. So welcome to the Eddie Trunk Podcast.
Welcome, everybody. Eddie Trunk here with you in time for another episode of the Eddie Trunk Podcast, which is new every Thursday, podcast1.com and iTunes. Hey, if you're shopping on Amazon, you know what to do, right? Start on my page, amazon.com/shop/Eddie Trunk. Take a look at what is for offer there on that page, and then go ahead on to the other areas of Amazon and continue to do your shopping. Appreciate you always starting there, though, at amazon.com/shop/Eddie Trunk. Just back from Jazz Fest in New Orleans, where I had the opportunity to shoot another episode of my upcoming new TV show on Access TV called Trunk Fest, which is me out there covering what goes on at some of these massive music festivals around the country. And it was another interesting and revealing trip. It was, one of the great things about doing this new TV series that I'm doing is it gives me the opportunity to explore some festivals and see some of them that I normally wouldn't go to because the music is not really my thing, so to speak. You know, more of a hard rock guy myself. Those are the festivals I know about, and God knows we have a ton of those festivals these days. But I've heard about some of these other festivals like Jazz Fest. I mean, if you think about it, I mean, it's been going. This was the 49th year. And I would never probably go to Jazz Fest on my own because, you know, just to go as a fan because, A, I'm not into jazz, and, B, my assumption would be, given the name Jazz Fest, that it is jazz. Well, this is what's going to be so cool about people who check out my new TV series. You'll learn more about these festivals if you've never been to them, as I am doing, and you'll find out about them with me. And essentially, Jazz Fest is every kind of music, maybe the least represented music that I saw there over this past weekend was jazz. There's gospel, there's R&B, there's pop, there is rock, there's a little bit of everything. And it is very ingrained in the culture of New Orleans. It really is. And New Orleans is a city that I had not been to in about 30 years. I went there about 5 months ago, last October, maybe 6 months ago, whatever it was, last October for Voodoo Fest, which is a completely unrelated festival. And now back there less than 6 months later to shoot a second of what will be 2 of 8 episodes coming from New Orleans. And this time at Jazz Fest. Jazz Fest runs over 2 weekends. So it's also happening this weekend as well. And Aerosmith is performing this weekend. I would have loved to have gone to that, but I will be at M3 this weekend. I'll tell you about my upcoming schedule in a second. But anyway, it was cool to be back in New Orleans, a city that I'm really, really enjoying. I mean, again, I hadn't been there in so long, and then to be there twice in 6 months, I really, really enjoy that city. A lot of fun, obviously, and a lot of drinking, a lot of partying, a lot of eating, and a great time there. So excited to have shot an episode, the 6th of what will be 8, I'm told, episodes of this new TV series. It premieres on Access TV on July 1st, 9:30, 8:30 Central. And Access TV, I find it reminds me very, very much of my years at VH1 Classic because there are people that absolutely who get Access TV and absolutely love it and worship it because it's got so much music content. And then there are those that have no idea of its existence. They don't get it. They've never heard of it. They don't know how to spell it. They don't know how to look for it. So much like I was in the early years of VH1 Classic, although Access TV, not so much early years, but still, I'm trying to educate people about not only a new show, but also the channel where you will find it, at least some people. So I'll tell you already, the channel is on your grids as AXS. That's how it comes up. Not Access spelled in the traditional sense. AXS TV is what you're looking for on your grids. If you're a music fan, you should know it. You should have it. And I'm sure you are a fan of it. If you are not or haven't heard of it, look for it. There are some cable systems that do not carry it. I'm hoping when we get a little closer to the air date of my show, there will be some outlets and alternative ways you can see the show. We'll know more about that when we get a little bit closer, but July 1st is the premiere date. I think the first episode that will run will be my episode from Sturgis and the big biker rally that goes on there. So it was cool to be back in New Orleans. I'm thrilled to be doing this show for Access. I hope and can't wait for you guys to all check it out. And we'll start gradually ramping up to its premiere on July 1st with more information as we get closer. Two more episodes to shoot of that. I'm not sure where exactly they're going to be. I believe one is going to be upstate New York and Woodstock, and I'm waiting on the information on the other. And then we'll have about eight done, and then the series will start rolling out. So good to be back in New Orleans this past weekend. Not my world musically so much. The only rock acts that were there really were Rod Stewart, who I did not see. I got to tell you, one of the things, I am not an early functioner at all. And you would think that covering music festivals, it would be mostly evening work. But I was out in the morning, starting in the morning at Jazz Fest, in the heat, in the sun, knocked the hell out of me. And the interesting thing about Jazz Fest is that it wraps up by 7 o'clock every day. It is not an evening event. So Rod Stewart went on at 5:30. I had finished my shooting day around 4, and I was baked and done and got out of there. So Rod Stewart really like the only rock act I had some interest in seeing, but I didn't because I just was kind of ready to get out at that point after having shot all day. Also shot some stuff around the city of New Orleans down on Bourbon Street at a restaurant, at a voodoo shop, had my cards read, first time for that. So very much more of a travel show when you see the new TV show I'm working on, and I'm excited for you to do so. Of course, don't forget, I have a daily radio show on Sirius XM 106 Volume, where you can hear me every day live 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern time, replaying every night 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern, and on demand as well on the Sirius XM app. Hope you check that out. And the interviews you hear on the Eddie Trunk podcast originate from the daily radio show that I do on Sirius XM. So with that in mind, real quick, couple other quick notes here at the top, and then we'll transition into the interview. With that in mind, though, want to let you know speaking of my radio show, which is called Trunk Nation, I have a brand new T-shirt just released, and that is available in the merch store on eddietrunk.com. Have a look at it. Very cool design. Thanks to my friend David Calcano for coming up with it. And be great if you bought one of those shirts and represented out there. Love to see you out there representing it. Trunk Nation shirt, brand new design, available in the merch store on eddietrunk.com. Signed copies either of my books, hit the books tab, music news updated daily, email me through the site, eddie@eddietrunk.com, and all of my upcoming appearances, which include this weekend, the M3 Rock Festival in Maryland, which I host every year. I'll be there Friday, most of Saturday, getting out a little early on Saturday night. I'll head to the airport on Saturday night, fly to Los Angeles, where Sunday I will host the Ride for Ronnie event for the Dio Cancer Fund in Encino. That is an afternoon event, Los Encinos Park, this coming Sunday. Steven Adler, Bisto Blanco, and Dio Disciples among the performers. And then I will stay in Los Angeles the week of May 7th and do my Sirius XM show from there. And look forward to spending some time in Southern California before returning. And then on to the next thing. We'll let you know what those are as they come in. Schedule always busy. Best way to keep up with everything I have going on, where I'm at, what I'm doing, is Twitter at Eddie Trunk. Also Instagram, Facebook as well at Eddie Trunk. But Twitter up to the second most complete. And that's where I would be most active. Now, the interview I have for you this week, I think you are going to love. I was excited to do this. It's incredibly rare for me to do an interview with somebody that I have not interviewed before, and that is the case with what you're about to hear. I spent almost an hour sitting down with Lenny Kravitz. Lenny is a guy that I've been a fan of and have known of his work since day one. 1989, his first album came out. I was working in rock radio well into it at that point. I remember very clearly that record coming in and the diverse nature of it, very eclectic. The fact that the guy wrote, performed, produced, sang everything on the record, it was crazy. And to this day, that is what Lenny still does. I tend to like Lenny Kravitz's more guitar-driven music. His music is all over the map. He does do everything from R&B to funk, and I like some elements of some of that stuff, but for the most part, the more guitar-driven stuff I absolutely love. And I always knew Lenny was a big Kiss fan. Of course, he did a song on the Kiss tribute record, and I knew that was somewhat of a common bond of ours. I did not know Lenny back in the day. It was kind of surprising because he's from the same area originally that I am, and I knew so many people in the music industry at that time, but he and I had never really crossed paths earlier than what you're about to hear. But the funny story about the backstory of this interview is that he was doing a quick run through at Sirius XM about 6 months ago, and I was doing my show from my home studio that day, and he had been doing something with another show in the studio I was about to patch into, and he had heard that I was coming on, and he said, where's Eddie, I gotta say hello. And we talked very briefly over the microphones, and he said, we got to do something. I said, Lenny, I would love to. So sure enough, he came in and hit up Sirius XM to spend some time talking with me. Now, he has a new record coming out, but the record is not being released until September. And I thought that the interview that we're doing, you'll hear me in the beginning say, we'll get to more about the new record in a second, and then I don't do it. And the reason why is because his publicist came over to me during the first commercial break and said, we don't want to talk about the new record yet. It's too early. And I said, oh, I thought this was to promote the new record. And, no, it's just to come and hang out and talk to you. So those interviews are the best. When you can do interviews like that where there's not the heavy sell, they're not pushing anything specific, those are the best interviews because you can just spread out, you can hang. There's not that pressure to drive to selling something. And that's why I think this interview you're about to hear was so heavily regarded. Since this originally aired live, I've gotten so many people who have said they really enjoyed this conversation. So I appreciate that very much. This was also filmed. It was shot. It was done on Facebook Live, and the video is archived. I believe if you go to my page, my fan page on Facebook, which is just my name, or the Sirius XM volume page on Facebook, you'll still see the video archived, and you can watch this whole interview as well if you'd like. But we had a great conversation. I could have went forever with the guy. I'm a fan of his work. Really, really enjoyed this, and I hope you do as well. One other side note to this that's really funny that happened off the air. As soon as we ended the interview you're about to hear, Lenny Kravitz handed me his phone and asked me to give him my number. I'm punching in my number into Lenny's address book on his iPhone, and as I'm doing it, the phone rings as a FaceTime call, and it is none other than Steven Tyler. And I see it light up Steven Tyler FaceTime, and I turned to Lenny and I said, Lenny, I'm thinking you probably want to answer this. And he's like, oh, yeah, do you know Steven? I said, a little bit. So he pushes FaceTime, and Steven Tyler pops up on the screen, is doing something with Nuno Betancourt in some band in Tennessee, I think. And he was singing and being Steven Tyler, and Lenny and I talked to him for a second, and it was a nice kind of surprise. It would have been great if it happened on the air. So it was really, you know, so crazy because here I am talking with Lenny Kravitz, and oh, by the way, Steven Tyler's FaceTiming Lenny, and we're talking to him. So just crazy, surreal stuff. Anyway, again, enjoy this interview. I really think you're going to, and I appreciate Lenny taking the time, and I hope to do a lot more with him in the very near future, especially with that album coming out in September. The really crazy thing about this, too, was that I did this interview, then I went to New Orleans for Jazz Fest, and then I'm in New Orleans, and I see a photo of Lenny posted in New Orleans on his social media. And then I inquire, I said, Lenny, are you in, I check with his team. I said, is Lenny in New Orleans? And it was the day after. And they said, yeah, he was. He did a private show and he's gone already. So I had no idea he was about to do a show because a lot of these guys do these private shows you don't even know about, and I would have loved to, maybe could have had the chance to see him play a day after I talked to him, but we missed each other there having no idea. So anyway, Lenny Kravitz for almost an hour on this week's Eddie Trunk podcast. I think you guys are really going to enjoy it. I enjoyed the conversation. It's a little look into his beginnings and a little touch on the new record, but we'll do more on that when we get a little bit closer. So again, for me, M3 this weekend. I'll see you there in Columbia, Maryland, then over to LA, see you at the Dio Cancer Fund event, then the week in Los Angeles before coming back. Rocklahoma will be here before you know it, Memorial Weekend in Pryor. I'll be out there hosting that as usual. Striper, May 30th, IDL Ballroom in Tulsa. Lots of Tulsa time, lots of Los Angeles time coming up. And again, follow on social media to keep up with me. All right, we'll hit a break. We'll come back and we'll get into my interview with Lenny Kravitz on this week's Eddie Trunk podcast.
The Eddie Trunk podcast.
Guy problems. If you're a guy, you know all about it. Well, how about Hims? You should know all about that. A new wellness brand for men. What kind of problems? Well, 66% of men lose their hair by age 35. And here's the thing. You start to notice hair loss, it's too late really to do anything about it. It's easier to keep the hair you have than to replace the hair you've lost. So that's where 4Hims comes in. 4Hims.com. It's a one-stop shop for hair loss, skin care, sexual wellness, all for men. Thanks to science, baldness can be optional. Hims connects you with real doctors, folks. These are not quacks, real doctors, and they give you medical-grade solutions to treat hair loss. We're not talking about any sort of fake stuff, snake oil pills. Nope. These are prescriptions, solutions backed by science. There's no waiting room, no awkward doctor's visits. It's easy. You answer a few questions, the doctor can prescribe what you need, and the products are shipped directly to you. Order now because my listeners get a trial month of Hims for just $5 today, right now, while supplies last. See website for full details. This would cost hundreds if you went to the doctor or pharmacy. Go to 4hims.com/trunk. That's FORHIMS.com/TRUNK. 4hims.com/trunk.
Are you looking for a champion's insight from a fan's perspective into the world of sports and entertainment?
Then check out In the Key with me, NBA champion BJ Armstrong.
And me, sports analyst Gerald Brown.
Right here on Podcast One. We know the business, and each week we'll chat with celebrity guests and provide an informed discourse on the cultural beats of the moment.
Download new episodes of In the Key every Thursday on PodcastOneSports.com, the Podcast One app, or Apple Podcasts.
Hey, have you checked out the big podcast with Shaq lately? Of course, Shaq and the team talk basketball and sports, but it's not all about sports. Shaq talks movies, TV, music, what's happening in his life, and maybe even a little gossip. Some of his past guests include Chris Webber, Rob Gronkowski, and Rob Riggle. Make sure you check out the big podcast with Shaq every Monday exclusively on Apple Podcasts with the podcast app and podcast1.com. I should say the podcast one app, and of course podcast1.com.
This is the Eddie Trunk podcast.
We're back with this week's Eddie Trunk podcast, and it's time now for my interview with Lenny Kravitz. Again, this interview originated on my Sirius XM show on 106 volume. The show is called Trunk Nation. It's live every day, 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern time. It replays every night, 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern. Please join me for daily rock talk and interviews on Sirius XM 106. From that radio show from about a week ago, this is my exclusive conversation with Lenny Kravitz. Enjoy.
Good to see you.
How's it feel to be back in New York, man?
It's great.
Where do you live now? You don't live here,
do you?
I live
in Bahamas, where my mom was from, in Eleuthera, and I live in Paris. But I'm from New York, born in Brooklyn.
No, I know all that, but yeah. I mean, do you still keep a place here?
I don't have a place here right now.
So when you get back, you come back, do you miss the vibe?
I stay with friends. With friends, but I love it.
Hey, Lenny Kravitz doing a little Airbnb?
You know?
No, you're
somebody's
not.
Somebody's couch. You know, can I stay?
Somebody mentioned to me the other day, the first album, Mr. Cab Driver, they said you need to rewrite that as Mr. Uber Driver or something like that, or yeah, Mr. Lyft Driver.
Yeah.
But you're always busy, man. You always got a lot of stuff going on, and you got a new record coming out called Raise Vibration, which is coming out towards the end of the year, right? A little
September
ways down the line.
7th, I think, yeah.
Okay, so you got a single coming sooner than that?
Yeah, that'll be coming out May 25th, I believe.
Yeah. 11th album.
Yeah. Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah.
And 30 years coming up next year since Let Love
That's
Rule.
That's what they say.
You feel like that to you?
Not at all. Not at all. It seems like it was yesterday.
It does.
It really does.
Because we were talking about that too. I was working in radio at the time and I remember getting that record and it does seem like yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a record that still holds up so well. Are you a guy that goes back and listens to your old music or are you always thinking forward?
No, I always move forward. The only time I have to listen to it was when I'm teaching the band stuff for tour. And I have to go and listen and go, wait, how did that go? You know, and that's when I hear. But I don't go home and like put the record on. That's too much for me, man.
How so?
It's just a lot of just the pet, man. When I put those records on, I can smell, feel, taste everything about my life at that time, which is cool, you know. But it's just a lot. It's a lot.
What were you thinking when you were that kid making Let Love Rule?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what I've always loved about your career, and I've seen you live many times, and I love this as well, is that you touch on so many different things in your music. You know, some people would be surprised to learn that I'm such a big fan of your music because at my core, I'm a hard rock guy.
Exactly.
You know, I love loud guitars, but there's elements of that in your music.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you have the funky side and the R&B side and all that. So you're a guy, and we were talking a little bit before we started about we're the same age, we grew up in the same area, we liked a lot of the same rock bands, we both are big Kiss fans.
Absolutely.
For you, how did that stew come to be that was Let Love Rule? Where did all those elements come from?
Growing up around parents that were just into everything. My mother was a theater actress, later a television actress. My father was a journalist for NBC, and he was a producer of music, jazz. So I grew up seeing everybody. My first concert in New York City, I was probably six, was the Jackson 5 at Madison Square Garden, James Brown at the Apollo, then going to see all these rock shows. I mean, because Sid Bernstein was a good friend. He was like a godfather to me. So we'd go to all the rock shows with Sid. Then But in New York, it was mostly about soul, R&B, jazz, funk. Then I moved to L.A. when I was 11 and ended up in Santa Monica in 1975. So it was the whole Dogtown Z-Boy scene. That's where I learned about Led Zeppelin and Jimi Hendrix and Cream and The Who and Kiss. That's where I became a Kiss fan, you know, right when I got to L.A. So I have all this music inside of me. So when I made my first record, I couldn't stick to one thing because I just love music. So one minute's more rock, one minute's a little more funky, a little more R&B, a little more blues, a little more gospel, a little more whatever. And it continues today.
Sure.
That way. Different sounds for me tell different stories and have different moods. So I'll use them.
See, that I find that interesting because as a kid, for me, I was exposed to all sorts of different music as well. And there was always music in my house, my parents playing different things. But once I sort of honed in on rock and as a kid, now I'm a little bit more open-minded, but as a kid, the power of hard rock music, like anything else that I knew up to that point had to be pushed to the side.
Right.
Was like you had to be on, like I was all in on that team and I looked at anything else as like a threat to the music that I loved.
Yeah.
So that's what I always found interesting about you and other people I know too, that it was about more inclusion than just being down that one lane.
Yeah, because my life was so that. You know, especially and also being, you know, mixed, you know, having being black and white and hanging out with all groups of kids. It's like, you know, I didn't stay in one. So I was the kid in school that got to go around to all the different cliques and hang out with all of them.
And they all accepted you?
Yeah, because the cliques, you know, it was weird. It's 75 in L.A. I remember going to the John Adams Junior High School in Santa Monica and there was the black kids hanging out together. There were the surfers. There were the Mexicans. There were the nerdy sort of kids that, you know, played Dungeons and Dragons. And, you know, it was like all these different groups of kids. And they all stuck to themselves. The kids that were more motocross and BMX bikes versus skateboarding.
Right.
But they were real cliques, you know. And I would just go around and hang out with all of them.
And is it true that, because I was telling you before, Slash is a good friend of mine. I know, of course.
We went to high school together.
You went to high school, right? Yeah. Were you friends?
We weren't friends, but I knew him. We were like, cool. I never went to his house or anything, but I used to see him in the hallway a lot.
And so
he and I were in the hallway a lot. and then ditching. But, yeah.
So when did you, because of course he plays and co-wrote with you, Always yes. on the Run. When did you reconnect after you became established musicians?
I was at the American Music Awards when they won a bunch of awards and Let Love Rule had just come out. And we saw each other. We were sitting near each other at the awards, and it had nothing to do with Lenny Kravitz or Guns N' Roses. We were both
the dude that had
like,
the
wait
hall
a minute.
Pass.
I remember you. It was like, and then we talked. We're like, oh wow, we both went to school together, and then we got friendly again. And then at the end of whatever tour, so what tour would that have been? Because we cut Always on the Run in 90, which came out in 91. So they were just finishing. What tour would that have been for them?
For Guns?
Yeah.
It would have been Use Your Illusion.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Because he took the Concorde from London, showed up in New York. It used to land like around 8:30, 8:45 in the morning, came straight to my house at that ungodly hour.
Right.
And then we both went out to Hoboken and cut that song.
Wow. So your musical connection came later on. It wasn't so much based on being in the same high school at the same time.
No, we just like, okay, you're doing your stuff, I'm doing my stuff, let's play together.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I think the first thing he did was the, I can't remember which was first, but he did the solo on Fields of Joy.
Right.
On Mama Said. And then I think that was the first thing.
Yeah.
Out in L.A. And then I said, why don't we write something? And so he planned it. He came the day his tour ended. He came straight to New York and we did that.
Tell me about, and I'm of course going to touch on the new record, which is coming out more, but I'm fascinated about that earlier period because you played essentially everything on the first record yourself and wrote everything. And where in your makeup coming up as a musician did you learn everything? Were you self-taught on everything? Did it happen very easily for you?
It was junior high and high school. I started out playing guitar, you know, when I was a kid in New York. My dad had an acoustic guitar.
That was the first thing.
Yeah, and piano, because we had a little upright piano in the apartment. And then when I got to L.A., I started playing drums. So I always wanted to be a drummer, but living in a tiny apartment in New York, that wasn't going to happen. My mom, we couldn't have drums. And so I started playing drums in junior high school. And then after that, I started playing bass. So I just always liked to play different instruments. Yeah. And it was never a plan on the first record to start playing all the instruments myself. I couldn't afford to pay people to play, and the people that I could afford didn't play the way I want that I felt they should. And so then my engineer was just like, dude, I've heard you play all the instruments, just do it yourself. And I was like, do it myself? That's no fun. I want people around, you know. But in the great tradition of people like Stevie Wonder and Todd Rundgren and Paul McCartney and Prince, and you know, who have done that, I was like, okay, cool, you know, I love those records. Let me try and play it myself. And I did, and that became my sound, and I'm still doing it today.
Yeah, I was going to, I mean, there have been times where you've had other people play on records,
yes,
of course.
Yeah, of course. And Craig Ross, my partner, is an amazing guitar player.
I want to talk about him because I agree, yeah.
Very underrated cat, like extremely.
But for you, did it get to a point when you realized that worked and that you had that sort of...
It became my sound, and I liked the process.
Yeah.
And there was something about...
How does the process start, Lenny? What do you build on first? Do you do it as if you had a band? Like, will you start laying down bass and drums?
On Let Love Rule, for instance, starting with that first album, I either went and played the drum track first whilst singing the song in my head, which is quite a thing to keep, you know, keep in time and keep everything grooving the way you want. Or I would have somebody play, like my engineer is a keyboard player. And so he would play whatever, a piano, a Fender Rhodes, whatever, while I would play the drum track so I could hear somebody. I'd teach the song,
right,
play with it, and then erase that and then start over, you know? But yeah, it was normally drums, guitar, bass, then more guitars, if they're, you know, and then build up from there, whether there's percussion or horns or orchestra or whatever overdubs there might be.
And in the 30 years,
keyboards,
almost 30 years since you've done Let Love Rule, obviously so much has changed the way studios work and technology all that. So do you find that beneficial? I mean, you're at your core, correct me if I'm wrong, more of an old school guy.
Yeah, yeah.
Are you still a guy that wants to record on tape, or have you embraced all the digital stuff? Or
I use a little bit of both. I have tape, I have Pro Tools, I have all that. But the equipment in my studios is all pretty, it's vintage. I have like a museum of vintage equipment, down to the board that I use, which is a Helios, which is the same board that would have been in Olympic when Hendrix was doing his first album, or Zeppelin. Mm-hmm. I bought it from Leon Russell.
Oh, wow.
And I have lots of, you know, great outboard gear and compressors and all this tube equipment and microphones. And so it's primarily an old school studio. But I like the sound of that equipment. I think it just has such a pure sound.
Right, right.
You know? Yeah.
And what about so you're building these records and...
You know, and even vintage synthesizers now, which are like from the late 70s and 80s, you know?
Yeah.
I have a great collection of them as well.
But you're building this layer of music and all this stuff, but obviously before you even get to that point, you need to create the songs, you need to write
absolutely.
The songs.
Absolutely.
And as a fan, the talent that I've always been most impressed by is... artists' ability to write great songs. Like, I feel like, not to diminish great musicians, but you can go to LA or New York and you can throw a stone and you can find an amazing guitar player.
Oh, you can
drummer.
Find guys who can play riff and have all this stuff and play fast.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Whatever.
But the ability to write and consistently write great songs.
I think to write, as you said, and also to groove.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of musicians that can play a lot of notes, or a lot of drummers that can play these big solos, and you're like, wow. But then you ask them to play 2 and 4. And sometimes the groove is not there.
Yeah.
So groove is something that's that's something that you're gifted with. And yeah, same thing, obviously, with songs. I mean, when you look at the best songwriters, whether it be Paul McCartney or Elton John or whomever, or Lionel Richie, anybody that just is a songwriter, and you go to those shows and you're just like, my God, the arsenal of songs that are, you know, are the fabric of our lives, you know, it's amazing.
So when did you know you could write songs? When did you first start?
I didn't really know till Let Love Rule, to tell you the truth. Because before that, I was really trying to find it. And I was experimenting.
You weren't even Lenny Kravitz before.
No.
You were working under the name Romeo Blue.
Yeah,
and
I was
whole
like,
other thing.
And I wanted to be in a band. I wanted to be the guitar player, the drummer, the bass player. I had no intentions on being the singer and being in the front. Really didn't. But I ended up being in some bands, and at one point, like, the singer wasn't happening, and then they looking at me like, well, you do it, you know? And I was like, you know, okay, I'll try. But and then I kind of got more into it. And then right before Let Love Rule, that record just came to me. I was doing all kinds of other things, playing with other people, making demos for people. I used to be the guy you could rent to, like, go make your demos. I'd play all the instruments and, you know, learn your songs, and I'd play them and produce them. I used to, you know, make pocket money doing that. But Let Love Rule just came to me.
Like, when you say that, did you just wake up with those songs in your head?
Yeah, all of a sudden, I was trying to write, and the things I was trying to write, I thought they were mediocre, and then I just got, just like with this album, just sometimes you just get quiet. And I just got quiet, and my life was going in a certain way. And I was with Lisa Bonet at the time, and we were having this amazing relationship and living this incredible sort of hippie lifestyle that we were living in the late 80s. And we were in love, and this record just came. Like, I just heard it. And I was like, there it is.
That's amazing. So you, like, you wake up.
Yeah.
You go into your studio. And these songs just start pouring out.
I just hear them, or I wake up in the middle of the night with them. So it's when I stopped trying that it happened.
Have you found that to be the case throughout the rest of your career?
This whole album, I dreamt.
Raise Vibration, the same thing.
Raise Vibration, I dreamt the whole album. Now, normally,
really?
Normally I'll dream 2-3 songs, and the rest you put together, but you're flowing creatively, so you feel good. And this whole record was dreamt.
So when you say,
waking up,
you wake up and write stuff down?
Yeah, or I run to the studio, or I grab my phone and start singing into the voice memo. You know?
Smoking a lot of weed before you go to bed, or what's going on, man? Popping Ambien?
Yeah,
what are you doing?
It just comes, man.
It's really?
Just, yeah. And so that was the whole exercise with this record, because after making records for 30 years, which isn't that long compared to, say, the 50 years of other people.
But it's a long time.
But 30 years is a long time.
Yeah, yeah.
And I wasn't sure where I was going. I wasn't sure who I was creatively at that moment. Who am I? What do I have to say? What's authentic to me right now? You know, I wasn't sure. I had to take a moment. Got quiet. Was in the Bahamas. Was living my little island lifestyle. You know, and woke up one night with a song in my head, and went in the studio. Started working on that. And what happens once you start working on something that you were given, and you get into it now? You're open. Things start opening up, and then the floodgates open, and now these songs are coming.
So every night you dream in one?
Not every night,
or?
But it could be once a week, could be twice a week, could be twice a month. It depends. But that's what happened with this record, and I let that happen. I got out of the way. I stayed out of the way. I took all the opinions out of the way. Also, there was a lot of people saying, you know, you should do this, you should try that, you know. You need to be relevant today and to do this and, you know, try this new music. And it's like, okay, that's cool, but I'm me and I need to be me.
And you were never that.
Never,
I mean, when you think
ever.
About Let Love Rule coming out in 1989,
oh God, there was
nothing like that.
That record was dry and organic. And, you know, at that time, the big records were like, say, the comparisons would have been like Bon Jovi records, which
sure.
had like big, you know, gated reverbs and
sure. big gang choruses.
Yeah, and like big... You know, that 80s big sound.
Sure, all that
Power
stuff.
Station and all that kind
yeah,
of stuff.
Yeah.
And here came Let Love Rule, which was like dry and very organic and very, intimate. And yeah, that's what I was hearing. That's what I wanted to do.
But I mean,
and
that
the records
was,
continued.
Yeah, that was so refreshing to me because I was working even then in rock radio. Mm-hmm. And I remember getting Let Love Rule like it was yesterday. I'm sure mm-hmm. I still have the promo CD. Mm-hmm. And I remember getting it and against everything that was going on at mm-hmm. that time, because so much of the stuff started to all sound the same because it was produced so much
the
same.
Well, yeah, that's when the production value was like a big thing.
Yeah, and it was a blueprint. There was the verse and the big gang chorus and, you know, it mm-hmm. jumped out at you. And then all of a sudden this record comes out and I remember reading it and it's like, wait a minute, this was done in Hoboken. And
right.
it's like, you know,
yeah.
who? How do I not know this dude? He's local.
Right.
And it was just like, it by being so very organic sounding and so different sounding, mm-hmm. it jumped out from the fray. So you've never been somebody that's,
no,
you've always kind of no. done it your way and it's worked.
Well, I'm talking to you. I'm still here talking to you. Thank God.
Yeah. Almost 30 years
yeah,
later
man.
After that first record with a
and
new
you
record.
Look amazing.
Oh, come on, man. I was saying on the air before, I said, this is on Facebook Live. Mm. People want to see you. They should put a box over my head.
No.
We'll come right back with more, a lot more to cover with Lenny Kravitz. The new album is called Raise Vibration. It's coming out September 7th, you said?
Yes, sir.
September 7th.
Yes.
Little ways to go, but there will be a single coming soon. And what's the song going to be that's the single?
It's called Low.
Low. Mm. I've heard some of the record. Mm. So I want to talk about some of the tracks
great.
On it. And I want to talk about, obviously... Do this forever. Tons of stuff with Lenny Kravitz as we come right back. It's on this week's Eddie Trunk Podcast.
This is the Eddie Trunk Podcast.
If you're looking to buy a car, you're probably familiar with terms like MSRP, and you might even know what it stands for, but what does it actually mean? The same goes for invoice, list price, and dealer price. It's enough to confuse anybody. All you're really looking for is a price that actually means something. Introducing True Price from True Car. Now you can know exactly what you'll pay for the car you want, including fees and accessories, before you ever get to the dealership. True Car dealers will show you the true price on cars like the one you want, all from the comfort of home. And how do you know if your true price is a great price? Because True Car shows you what other people paid for that same car you want, and your certified dealers know this, so they set their true price competitively so they can win your business. So when you're ready to buy a new or used car, visit True Car to enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Some features are not available in all states.
This is the Eddie Trunk Podcast.
Let's get back into it now with Lenny Kravitz on this week's Eddie Trunk Podcast. Mm-hmm. You make these records yourself for the most part, but then you've got to go deliver it live. And
yes.
I imagine for you, it's really important to find people that have your vision and can get it over. And the one guy that's been to your side, at your side the whole time, who you mentioned before, and I wanted to bring up because I think it's, I don't know him personally, but I'm such a fan of his playing and what he brings, is Craig Ross.
Yeah. Is amazing. One of the best guitarists ever. And those that know, in fact, when we did the Kennedy Honors thing for Led Zeppelin, I don't know if you saw that.
I did.
Paige gave it up to Craig.
Wow.
He was like, oh yeah. You know? But Craig, what's amazing about Craig is that he can play any genre authentically. And he's just such a monster player. And of course, we wrote Are You Gonna Go My Way together. I mean,
I wanted to ask you about that, because that, if you look at your catalog of songs, and you've had a lot of hits, and then you've got some songs in your catalog that are deep tracks that, I mean, I absolutely love as well. Mm-hmm. But when you think about it, I would think most people would look at Are You Gonna Go My Way if they know Lenny, if they only casually know Lenny Kravitz, as the song they know, as the song in your history to this point. Mm-hmm. When you and Craig wrote that song, even that riff, which is so, become so iconic, did you know, when you write, do you know you're making something?
Had no idea.
No idea what's going to jump out.
That song was cut in 5 minutes. We were getting to the end of a session, and we came up with this thing. At that time, even on my third album, I still wasn't booking out studios 24 hours yet. The next client was waiting to get in to their session, which would start like at 3 o'clock. I used to go to the studio at 9 a.m., dude. Because there was
cheaper.
There was an opening. It was a thing. And
so you weren't in the lockout phase at that point.
Not yet. Not yet. And I was like, when am I going to be able to just have the studio to myself, keep the board? Because, you know, this is pre Pro Tools and all that. So you'd have a song up, and now you're loving the mix. You're loving how it's sounding. You got to take it down, come back tomorrow, start over again. But anyway, the next client was coming in. We came up with this thing, put it down in 5 minutes. And went home with this track with no words, no melody. I played it over and over and over the entire night on my boombox at home. Wrote it down on a.
The riff? Was the riff there yet? The open?
No, the riff was there. The riff was there. The whole song was cut. Okay. There was just no vocal and no melody. I mean, no lyric.
Right.
So that night, I write it. I go back in the next morning. I sing the thing. I had no idea what that was going to be. I thought this is so foreign to what's going on the radio and I don't know. There were things in one speaker. There was all this phasing. At one point, the whole track phases.
Right, there's a phase.
The whole track, everything, drums, bass, guitar, the whole thing phases. Things were out of phase. I remember when it first came on MTV. There was actually we had to fix the mix because there was music not coming out of the speakers. It was like they were canceling each other out. But, and when we started to work that song, it took a long time for radio, for MTV. It took a long time. But I believe that video had a lot to do with it as well. I met Mark Romanek, the director of that video, who
really cool stuff.
I mean, it was just a simple video, but it was so effective.
Yeah.
And the visual and the whole thing and, It all helped, but then once it got over, that was it. It was like never went away. But it was a thing.
So to this day,
I don't know. Hit songs. To answer your question,
do you know? Do you know when you write something, what's going
to
be?
I know when I write something that I like, and I go, well, that's a hit to me.
Right.
But a hit to me, I don't know if that's a hit to other people. You know, it's interesting. I think the only time I ever knew I had a hit was when I wrote Again for the Greatest Hits.
It's funny you bring that up. I wanted to ask you about that because I love that song. And when that came out as the bonus track on the Greatest Hits record,
that was
said to myself, was this something he passed on and didn't put on a record? Because this is a smash.
They called me, the Nancy Berry, who was running the label. She called me. She says, we're gonna do a Greatest Hits album. First of all, I thought it was Greatest Hits. I've only made a few albums.
Am I done? You dropping me?
No, Greatest Hits, already? You're supposed to be old when you do that. But she's like, no, it's time for a Greatest Hits. She goes, we need one song, and we want it to be a mid-tempo ballad. That's what we... So I'd never done that thing before where somebody said, this is what we want and you got to deliver it on this day. Never. But I had this challenge and I had a month to do it. And came with that song, crafted it, worked on it. I mean, really had a direction for that. And when it was done, I was like, okay, that's a hit. That's a hit. And it was. But that's the only time I knew. The only other time I knew I had a hit song was when I gave Justify My Love to Madonna. Mm-hmm. I called her and I said, I have a number one song for you. I had just come off the road from the Let Love Rule tour. I was nobody. I was the new kid on the block. And so those are two times.
And it didn't help that you were giving it to the biggest pop star in the world, who, yeah, at that point, even if it was a bad song, she probably could have found a way to make it hit.
Because that was when she was doing her Immaculate Collection.
The book, yeah.
So she was, killing it, as she was for a very, very, very long time.
And again, is one of my favorites. Man, I love your vocal on it. I love the drum sound on it. It's just that big smack.
That was cut in my house in Miami at the time. And we worked on that drum sound for probably a week.
Oh, so
and
it's... my put a lot
engineer
into it.
Who, I mean, we used to fight over it because... I mean, it's like a week. It's like, okay, I really think it's got that vibe. It's got enough of that Bonham-esque sort of thing in the drums that I liked at that time. And he to this day still doesn't like that drum sound. I was like, I think it worked, man. But that drum sound was a big thing. That was like the center of the track.
Yeah, it jumps right out at you. It drives the whole thing.
Exactly.
It's awesome. Let me turn that around on you. Had there been songs that you wrote, I'm sure there have been, that you're like, this is a stone cold smash, and it just tanked. Nobody cared. Was there ever one or two of those that you wrote that you were just convinced it's the single, it's the hit, and then it just didn't go the distance?
I'm trying to think. You look at me, I'm like, yeah, I've had nothing but success.
All my songs are hits.
What are you talking about? No, it's happened. It's happened. I'm just trying to think. When and what.
Right.
But it's happened, yes.
Well,
while we're talking
about songs that I made a little hit list of your catalog of songs that I absolutely love. Okay. We're not going to have time for you to give me great detail on all of them.
I'd be curious to know what.
But I want to know,
what you like.
Well,
knowing so much of the other things.
Well,
I
could give you a deep track.
Okay.
That I would maybe say my favorite Lenny Kravitz album, if I had to pick, a Circus.
You know, okay, but let me tell you. So last night with Questlove, they were saying, so how come nobody likes Circus? And I said, the fans, that was the fans' record. They love that record.
I love it.
And it was coming after Arguing on My Way. And it was a strange record, but it was a very cool record. And I was going through a lot at that time. My mom was dying of cancer. You know, the whole record thing and the fame and all that comes with it was just a circus going on in my life at that time.
Yeah, even the title track is just...
But which is your track?
With a deep track?
Yeah.
Beyond the Seventh Sky.
I knew it. I knew it.
You talk about Zeppelin.
Trunk's ears. that track was cut in a castle in France. I cut half the record... That record went through three studios, New York at Waterfront in Hoboken, the Bahamas Compass Point, and I rented this chateau in France because I wanted to do my Stone Zeppelin thing and go rent a castle and, you know, live out there and cut a record.
Remote truck out
and,
in the driveway.
Exactly. And that was cut. There was this big sort of ballroom in that chateau, and those drums on Beyond the Seventh Sky. Ugh.
And that's that Bonham behind the beat.
Oh yeah. I was channeling Bonham.
That's a heavy song. It's probably one of the heaviest songs you've done.
Yes.
Yeah.
When I come back to the States, I'm gonna add that to the set list.
Oh man, that would be badass.
Yeah.
But even on that song, like a song like Rock and Roll Is Dead, mm-hmm. which people try to make that claim now about rock and roll, mm-hmm. but what were you saying back then in that song?
It was more, you know, it was kind of a weird song because I wasn't talking really about rock and roll is dead. I had some friends in a very big band. I won't say who, because you'll know, everybody knows who they are. And they were really ruining themselves with a lot of drugs and really going down a path that I thought was sad and to an excess, mm-hmm. not fun anymore, to an excess, to their detriment. And I was having a talk with them and say, why are you doing this to yourself, man? And they were saying, because we got to be rock and roll. And so that song, when I said rock and roll is dead, what I was saying was, if you listen to the lyrics really carefully, I was basically saying, that's dead, man. You don't have to do that to be rock and roll. Rock and roll is dead, bro. You don't need that.
Right.
Just be who you are and be rock and roll. So it was kind of a weird, it was a little ambiguous, but it was taken as Lenny Kravitz said, rock and roll is dead. How dare he, you know? And then Prince actually answered me with a song called Rock and Roll is Alive and Well and Lives in Minneapolis. I don't know if you ever heard that track, but he answered me, which was fun. But yeah, but that's a cool track as well.
So many great ballad good on rip. That record too.
I can't get off my mind.
Oh God. Yeah. I mean, what a vocal on that. Kind Thank of you. Almost a precursor to Again in a way.
Absolutely.
In the structure of the song
Absolutely.
And everything.
Absolutely.
But that was a song that I thought should have been I mean, I know it did okay, but I thought it should have been a massive hit.
Right.
Thought it was
Thank
amazing.
You. Thank you.
Getting away from the Circus record, some of the other stuff, well, I was always interested in, you had a big hit with American Woman doing the Guess Who cover. You haven't done a lot of covers in your career, but why that song? Why did you decide to do that?
I got a call from Guy Osiri, who was dealing with the Spy Who Shagged Me soundtrack and movie, and he says, we want you to cut American Woman for the movie. And I thought, what am I going to do with that? It's like, it's perfect. It's amazing. Like, I'm not going to touch that song. He said, just try it. Just do it. I was in Miami at the time. I think I started it there. I said, okay, let me try and mess with it. And so I got into it and I listened to it and I found my way. I started cutting it. And it's obviously very different, but again, I had no idea about that.
You're going to do a cover, I would think the idea is to make it your own.
Yes.
Why do it if it's going to be?
And so I did, and it came out, and it was like, then they're like, you got to make this video. We're getting traction. We made this big video.
Yeah.
Heather Graham was in it. Huge song, Grammy. Like, I was like, it's amazing. But the beautiful thing was then Burton Cummings and called me
from the guest.
Yeah, room. And was like, thank you so much. And I love,
sure, I'm sure he liked getting the publishing too.
I love what you did. And that's the whole thing. There were some new houses bought. Yeah.
Just bought a car. Lenny, thanks.
There was a tour. No, they were talking about houses. Houses. They were buying houses, man. And they went back on tour.
Yeah.
And so that was the beautiful thing. Like, I made a friend. I honored him with the cover. He liked it a lot. And then it was a win-win for everybody. So it was like, and then I ended up meeting them. I went up to Much Music in Canada and got to meet them. I think we even played it together. But that was a very interesting thing because I had no idea what to do with that song. And next thing, it's like one of these songs that, like, there's a lot of people that don't realize that it's the Guess Who.
Yeah.
They think it's my song. I'm like, no, it's not mine.
Yeah, you figured out what to do with it because it's amazing. We got to go to a break, and then I got some people from Facebook Live that want to chime in, and we're going to ask their questions. But I'm just going to give you my list real quick that I had.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, of course, Always on the Run, Fields of Joy, Stillness of Heart, I love.
Oh, thank you.
I mean, I love that
That's
track.
One of my favorites,
Dirty
too.
White Boots, more recent, from Strut, love that. Beyond the Seventh Sky, I mentioned. Mm. Believe, I love.
Thank you.
It goes on and on,
I'm taking your list so I can...
I'll help.
So I can get the set list going.
I can. If you'd like me to write the set list, I will, but...
I would love that.
Probably 90% of people would leave because they wouldn't... I'd have deep tracks on it, and people are like, well,
that's
I want
all right.
to hear that, so.
I want the Eddie Trunk set list, bro.
It'll have to be at a small, intimate club for only hardcore
fans
only.
No, but I'm going to get a few of those in.
Yeah, yeah.
I'll get Believe in. I'll get Always on the Run in. I'll get... anyway, we'll go
Seventh
through it
Sky,
all.
You're not going to... You're going to do that?
Gail, my bass player, who's amazing, Gail Ann Dorsey, who you would know, she played with Bowie for 15 years before me. That bass part is really like out there and crazy, and she's like,
she wants to dig into it.
No, she doesn't want. She's
like, she doesn't want to do
like,
it.
Please don't make me. Please don't make me learn that song.
Coming right back with more with Lenny Kravitz. And yes, I got your questions here. You guys watching, we're going to hit Lenny with them right after this.
This is the Eddie Trunk Podcast.
Thank you.
Foreigner with the 21st Century Orchestra and Chorus, the new album featuring the classic hits as you've never heard them before, live and orchestral. The album was recorded at KKL Luzern, Switzerland in May 2017. It is the very first Foreigner album with full orchestra and choir. Together with the 21st Century Orchestra and Choir, the performance showcases all of Foreigner's biggest hits: Cold as Ice, Say You Will, Double Vision, Urgent, Feels Like the First Time, Jukebox Hero, and more. These anthems have been reimagined through orchestral and choral arrangements and can now be enjoyed from a completely new perspective and with fantastic sound quality. Available on CD, DVD, CD, 180-gram vinyl, box set, and digitally on April 27th. So that would mean it's available now. The live performance will also be broadcast in June on a PBS channel near you. Be sure to catch Foreigner on tour this summer, commencing June 15th through August 4th with Whitesnake and Jason Bonham's Led Zeppelin Evening. Foreigner, the new album with the 21st Century Orchestra and Chorus. Exclusive CD and DVD available only at Walmart.
This is the Eddie Trunk Podcast.
Let's get back into it now with Lenny Kravitz on this week's Eddie Trunk Podcast.
Let's go to, it looks like Valencia, who's also on Twitter, writes, before Prince's death, did you and he have any further plans to perform or do music together?
Yes, we had talked about, he had kept bringing up this tour that we would do together. And you know, he's like, we should do this. We should go out and tour together, and we'll flip flop. One night I'll close, one night you'll close, and we'll just go around and do this tour. And we talked about it for like a few years, but unfortunately, you know, that never happened. Mm. You know, we played in the studio. He'd come to my shows and play. I'd go to his shows and play. But as far as us doing a tour together, that was the plan.
You know, I'm a big fan of the band Soul Asylum, and Dave Perner. Mm-hmm. Actually told me that he and Prince had recorded one of Dave Perner's songs.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
I didn't know that.
That Soul Asylum's drummer, Michael Bland, mm-hmm. Was Prince's drummer.
Yes.
And Michael told me that he recorded it with Prince, and it was one of Perner's songs, and Dave was like blown away to find
out.
I'm
sure it's in the vault. They're going
to
find it.
Yeah. But Dave was like blown away to find out that this had happened. Hmm. For you, do you know, was there things that maybe Prince did of yours, or did you guys write stuff that hasn't seen the light of day? Is there stuff in the vault with Lenny Kravitz?
Yes. And they were as he called them when we did them, they were like souvenirs, mementos. Like, we'll just put it.
New original material?
Yeah, stuff that we did at Paisley.
Right.
And just put it in the vault.
So do you have copies of it?
I have copies of one thing, yes.
And is Prince on it as well?
Or? Yes, both of us are playing all the instruments and doing everything, and it's in there.
Right.
And then there's things that I'm on that I still won't say to this day, because they were like, he'd say, come here and do this, whether it's, you know, sing or do something, or do, and you'd have to really listen and say, oh, that's Lenny. You know what I mean? They were just like little secret mementos. Yeah.
Wow. It's amazing.
Which were cool, man.
Yeah. So maybe at some point, once they dig into his vaults, we'll get some of this stuff, you think? Would you like that to happen?
There's one thing that I'd love to finish that we started, yeah, that I know in particular that's funky.
Is it maybe something you would do on your own for one of your records?
Yeah, or finish it, yeah.
Okay. All right, cool. Let's see here. Whoever's handwriting is just awful here. I thought mine was bad. Mm. This is... I can't read who the person is that's asking this, but they want to know, my kids, who are 10 and 14, watching The Hunger Games, and you're on my TV now all of a sudden, because they're all of a sudden obsessed with this movie, and I had no idea you had done that film, because I hadn't seen it until they started.
I had no idea I'd done it.
So, I mean, obviously a massive movie series, and you're in a couple of them, I know. Acting, you'd done some other stuff too. You had a show, Star, was it?
Well, that was with Lee Daniels. I just did a couple of guest appearances because I had done two of his movies, The Butler and Precious.
Right.
And so it just started like, you know, I don't know, I just got called and like, why don't you do this? And then the the director of Hunger Games saw Precious, and he's like, why don't you come do this? And then someone else like called, and I just ended up doing several movies. But it was fun. It was amazing. I love the collaboration. And I'm going to do more films. I'm actually going to make my own film coming up in the next year. But right now I'm getting ready to go on the road and just play music.
Did you have you dabbled in acting a little bit before music? Did you do some commercials and stuff?
Yeah. And I did theater. My mother was a theater actress, and I did plays, I did theater, I did, all that when I was younger. But then when the music bug really hit me, I was like, I put blinders on, and that was it.
Right. Yeah. So it's definitely a secondary thing. Music's still the primary thing for
absolutely.
You?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Okay. Let's see here. This is, looks like Gretchen watching on Facebook Live. Dream artist you'd love to work with and never got the chance to yet.
Dream artists I've never, well, the ones that I got to work with, like, you know, I worked with Michael Jackson, I worked with Bowie, I worked with, you know, Prince, I worked with
Madonna.
You know, Curtis Mayfield. I mean, but I'm trying to think who, well, you know, I can't answer that question. Aretha Franklin.
Mm.
I would love to write and produce something for Aretha Franklin.
Okay.
Yeah.
There you go, Gretchen. This is Roseanne. She wants to know, what inspires your fabulous fashion sense?
That I guess that comes from my mother, growing up in New York City with my mom in the 70s, and she had great style, and all her friends, you know, I used to be around Miles Davis and all these folks, and you know, they all dressed really cool and had cool apartments. And so I really got that from being around my mom and being around her group of artists.
Yeah. What's the Lenny Kravitz closet look like, man?
There's like storage. I don't know. It's a lot of stuff.
Suffice it to say, it's a walk-in.
It's a lot of stuff. Yeah, it's a lot of stuff.
Or do you go to cities and like look at clothes? Or you go to shops and finding spots and stuff?
I used to do that a lot. I used to go to all the thrift stores like back in the 90s when that was really happening. Now thrift stores are like the same price as like boutiques on right. on Madison Avenue, you know.
Concert
like,
shirts, $75, right?
75, shit, man. They got ones that are like, you know, 1,000, you know, this 1970 something Stones or Zeppelin
right.
shirt. But I love fashion. I love the art of fashion. It's one of the things I'm, you know, that I'm into, as well as, you know, photography and design. And
yeah, I wanted to ask you about that. For people that don't know, you've got a book or two, right? That
yeah,
you've done, into photography somewhat recently.
I did a book, and I did a an exhibition that went around the world to some different countries, and I have a design firm called Kravitz Design, and we do interior design and architecture and products, and we design everything, you know, from couches to cutlery to lighting fixtures and door handles and carpets and
wow.
and you know, hotels. We do hotels. I designed a Leica camera that I'm doing my second camera that's coming out this year, and you know, a Daytona Rolex watch and blah blah blah. So there's all, you know, all kinds of things, tiles. And
how'd you get into that though? That I mean, there's always been a visual sense to what you do, but the actual designing something, I mean, architecturally, you're coming up with the stuff. Are you drawing? Are you writing? How
I
you
draw
doing
very
that?
Crudely, and then the people that really know what they're doing put it in the computer and make sure that it will stand up, you know? But I just always loved design.
Right.
And when I had my first apartment, when I was doing Let Love Rule, I was renting an apartment on Broome and Mercer, and you know, I couldn't afford to buy furniture, and I couldn't afford to just, you know, get a decorator to come in and work. So I did it. I was like, let me just do it myself. And I would find things on the street. You know, people would put out couches and tables and chairs on the street, and I would fix them up and, you know, repurpose them. And I would do the interiors myself and with friends. And so just kind of like just hanging out, doing stuff. And then it got into like this, turned into like a sickness. and then I was like, you know what? I kept buying places and redoing them, selling it, buy another one, redo it, sell it. And after a while, I was just like, I can't keep doing this. So I started a firm where I could do it for other people.
I was going to say, I sense like a reality show here somewhere.
Right.
Lenny Kravitz flips your house or something like that. But you can actually, on a serious note, you can actually go to your site, LennyKravitz.com, and, and there's a link to that I noticed, which is Kravitz Design. So you have a business there.
I have an office here in New York on Crosby Street.
If somebody did want to use you, they can... And you would oversee it, I would think. Is that how it works?
We design, we do. We have, you know, we just built a house in Los Angeles, an amazing house up in Hollywood Hills that just sold for $33 million. And you know, we just finished a hotel in Toronto called Bisha. And you know, I mean, so we're doing all these different projects around the world.
Right.
Nightclub in Paris, you know, all kinds of things.
Yeah, speaking of going to Paris, which you said you also live, I know you got dates coming up. You're playing throughout Europe and stuff. And I was looking at the dates, and I noticed. I mean, you as a headline act are playing huge places over there. You certainly have a tremendous following here in America as well. But it suffice it to say, is it bigger in Europe? In terms of your draw,
I don't know if it's bigger, but I've been touring there more. But I'm coming back here after that, and I'll be playing. Arenas and some festivals here in the States that you'll hear about.
Right. Yeah. But why do you think they gravitated towards your music so much there? You know, I find it interesting. There's artists that always were real big there, but not, you look at whether it be Thin Lizzy or T-Rex in that world, that over there, a whole different thing.
The label sent me there first. They were like, we don't know what to do with you. Lenny Kravitz, you know, you got this name and you're making this music and you're black, white, and it's this and it's that. And, you know, it's not one genre, so it's not just rock or it's not just R&B. Or what do we do? Go to Europe. Sent me to Europe. Sent me to Paris. Sent me to London. Sent me to Amsterdam, and sent me to Hamburg, Germany. And I broke in Paris and London and Hamburg and Amsterdam. Those were the four places that I broke. I think they weren't as concerned with being in a box, and. Then I came back to America, and it started to happen. But Europe started it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What do you make of where we are now? Because obviously so much has changed since it's been almost 30 years since Let Love Rule in terms of the way the business works. Do you think an artist like what you're doing, which is a wide net of music, do you think there's a way you could push through the clutter that's out there? I mean, there's pros and cons to everything, but there's so much out there.
At the same time, if there's a kid in his bedroom somewhere, in his basement, wherever, can put it out, and it can be discovered without a label, without management, you know. But
that's also the downside, though.
Exactly,
because anyone could do it, so there's no real gatekeeping anymore.
But it's hard to break through, and it's hard. I mean, the whole thing is hard.
Yeah.
There's so much information, there's so much music, there's so many projects, there's so many films, there's so much content out there. You know, I mean, you know, the new Zeppelin record would come out when I was a kid. I was living in L.A. at the time after we moved there, and I remember going out to Tower Records, and people were lined up 3 days ahead of time, sleeping bags, tents, you know, waiting for this. Back then, it was just like...
They did that for concert tickets, too.
I remember that,
too. I worked
too.
In a record store.
I remember that, too. You'd line up to get them, try to get them front row tickets. But there's just so much coming at people now. It's hard, man.
Yeah.
And then you've got, you know, all these stations that are in... it's this. The station plays this.
Right. Classic rock doesn't play new music.
And this one
plays
that. New
music doesn't play classic.
And it's the same 15 songs all day. And it's, you know... But anything can happen. That's the beauty of all this.
Huge thanks to Lenny Kravitz. That was a lot of fun for joining me on this week's Eddie Trunk podcast. And hopefully we'll do more with Lenny in the very near future. Again, the Eddie Trunk podcast is new every Thursday. Podcast1.com and iTunes. And don't forget to hit me on social media at Eddie Trunk. Twitter, where I'm most active. Instagram, Facebook, and EddieTrunk.com is the website. Don't forget the new shirts available, Trunk Nation shirts, in my online store. And you can get signed copies of my books. All my appearances on the homepage as well. I reminded you about them earlier. And when you do any shopping on Amazon, please start on my page, which is amazon.com/shop/Eddie Trunk. Katie Irizarry is the producer of the Eddie Trunk podcast. I'll see you again next Thursday for another all-new episode, always free, on podcast1.com and iTunes. Bye.
Salty Night from the Lady Gang podcast. If you're into getting a very sassy, sexual, beautiful, inspiring, funny, oftentimes embarrassing, slightly anal podcast in your repertoire, subscribe to us, Lady Gang, on Podcast One, the Podcast One app. And please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts.